Thundergrunt.
Hey guys.
Bob.
Hey Bob.
Introduce yourselves, even though we all know who I am now.
I am Jimmy George. I am a full-time script consultant and a screenwriter.
I'm Jamie Nash, screenwriter and screenwriting podcaster.
And I'm Bob Rose, and today I'm going to play the part of the positive guy. Because we're going to talk about Hereditary. You know what's really funny is I watched this last night, and on my Amazon Fire Stick, I have the voice remote, and you can just say movies into it, and it pulls them up.
Amazing.
And I had to do it 3 or 4 times. Oh. I'm like, is this my Baltimore accent? Because I was like, Hereditary. You know, and anyway, it kept finding other stuff, and I was like, oh, come on, I don't want to type it in. Anyway. Hereditary, guys. This is one that we've been talking about for a while.
I know. We've been talking about doing this episode back and forth for several months.
I think if Jamie didn't push us, we would have. Me and Jamie don't agree on it.
Yeah.
And you kind of.
I'm kind of in the middle on it.
That's a good mix.
That's going to make a great mix.
That's a good mix. It's a sandwich. You're the cream, Jamie.
I think. Exactly. I get that a lot. It's on my business card.
The cream.
I think it's one of these movies that keeps coming up in conversation. I hear people say it's their favorite movie. I hear people say they hate it. And it's also one that's slightly hard to analyze for a podcast like ours. Mm-hmm. So I think that will be interesting. I think that's informative. Like why is this one hard to, kind of wrap your arms around, and does that make it bad or good or interesting, or what's the story?
I agree. Yeah.
There you go.
Because I was saying that stuff right before we started.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because I think we specialize in genre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because genre has a map. Mm-hmm.
So are you saying this is not a horror movie?
You know what?
That's a hot take.
Isn't it one of those movies that the people have argued?
Absolutely.
I've definitely seen on Twitter people arguing, is this horror?
I think this is the one that brought. This is one of those ones that ignited that topic, at least recently.
Ooh, not a fun topic for me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's...
How can you have a movie where somebody cuts their head off with
a piano
in an attic with a corpse
floating and say it's not a harm?
Right. Hail, Payman. It's a drama.
It's a drama. Family drama.
It's literally about a demon, like...
Yeah, there's supernatural elements.
Doesn't matter,
abound.
Bob. It's not a horror movie because it didn't scare me.
It didn't scare me.
That's a whole episode we could do just on the. Do you understand? You're talking from your perspective,
not what it's intended to be. Yes.
This one also.
Who wrote it?
It's Ari Aster is how I'm going with it, and I'm not sure. 100%.
I'm sure he's in the last year. He's probably fed up with people saying his name wrong.
Yeah, he should have changed it to Barry Dastardly. So this movie came out at Sundance, I remember, and had a lot of buzz. Like people were saying, it's the scariest movie ever, the best movie since The Exorcist. So it was a bit of a backlash against it too, but also a bit of positive.
Whenever they pull The Exorcist out, you always expect the backlash. Yeah. They always pull The Exorcist out.
And I know
out.
He didn't ask for it, you know?
Yeah.
No one makes a movie going, this is going to be the new Exorcist. Babadook didn't do that and everything, but they pulled it out anyway.
Yeah,
I would try to go for it. This is going to be the next Paranormal Activity 2.
Yeah.
That's the way I like it.
Which Paranormal was the one with the videotape?
All of them.
No, No. The one with the time traveling VHS tape. That was three, right?
Three or four.
Three.
I'd be honored to make a movie that said, I think it was Paranormal Tour 3. I'd be like, okay.
No, yeah. I think you're right.
I think Paranormal Activity 3 is actually pretty good. It's similar to this movie in that the witches bust out in the end.
I like Paranormal Activity 3. The time travel.
I don't remember the time travel part, though, to be honest.
They look into the past through a VHS tape. It doesn't matter. We're talking about Hereditary.
Yeah. Which is really a reboot of
Paranormal Activity 3. So
this movie made, when did this come out? 20, 18, I guess. Yeah, just last, this year.
Yeah.
June of 2018. Is that? Yeah. Let me start.
You're living in the past, Jamie. June last year.
Yeah, man. Well, that's what I was like. Last year, 2017. I'm like, why does it say 2018? But it's 2019. So it made domestically $44 million off about a $10 million budget reported. And
that's pretty good for a horror movie.
And
right?
Foreign, yeah. It made 35. So it made, you know, $80 million worldwide off of a $10 million supposed budget. Probably didn't even cost that much. It probably cost less, and it was bought for $10 million at Sundance. Yeah, so they probably justified it with the budget or something.
I think also it's the movie on Twitter that I saw most talked about when the Oscar noms were announced.
Yeah, Toni Collette.
Toni Collette, yeah, I don't think I saw any movie mentioned more than
about being snubbed.
About her being snubbed. Specifically her, not the movie, but her. Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah, not since Paranormal Activity 3 was snubbed by the Oscars.
Right.
But that was we'll talk about that in another podcast.
For score. The score to Paranormal Activity 3.
So I don't have a lot of knowledge about how this movie came about. And I didn't do a ton of research, so I'll just give you what I do know. I know this guy came onto the scene. I think AFI, maybe? Mm-hmm. He was an AFI person. He made a lot of shorts, one of which went viral that I did watch last year, called the Strange Things About the Johnsons or something like that.
That's about
it's,
right.
And it's title. Out there. Google it. It's like a 20-minute short. Very interesting.
It's
short.
On YouTube. It's just on YouTube.
Yeah. Have you seen it?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. It's really interesting.
I haven't seen it.
It's this weird, like reverse, what's the word? Reverse sexual abuse story where the kid abuses the dad. So it's kind of done in the satirical way.
Okay.
It's an interesting movie. It's 20 minutes, and it kind of went viral because of the subject matter, because of the themes behind it. So in a way, while it's doing this twisted thing, it's also making a commentary. It became really popular. And I think that kind of launched him into the space where people wanted to be in business with this director.
Also,
with interesting ideas.
Having seen that, and that he comes from that kind of the short film world, mm-hmm. I think that's really good in telling what we're going to talk about. Because, you know what I mean?
Because the things that you can do in a short...
It's different because shorts don't have rules technically.
Right.
As someone who makes shorts,
right,
like you can kind of do anything, and the structure isn't.
And that's why I personally am not a fan of short films.
Right. Right.
This is great. This is exactly what we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Shorts are like skits or sketches.
Yeah. They don't have beginnings, middles, and they don't have to.
They don't have to.
So the only other things I really know about how this movie came to be, I think. You know, he shopped some things around. Maybe he shopped this around without the supernatural element. I'm not sure about that. But at some point he realized like a horror movie could get, you know, money where these other things might not get money.
Yeah.
I know he was, the only thing I remember about the development process is he was with Danny DeVito's company at one point. And they did a reading for it. And so Danny DeVito's company wanted to make the movie, but somehow they didn't. And then they ended up at, what is it,
A24?
Who's done a lot of interesting kind
of independent It's a good home. Yeah.
They make movies like this.
Exactly.
They really do. The Witch. You're right.
It's right in line with The Witch. So I did find out a few extra things besides what, because I didn't know some of the stuff you just said. He developed this. He wrote 8 scripts before this.
Okay.
And that was when he decided about the horror thing after those 8 scripts and not having success with the development of those. This script was in development itself for years. And
yeah, I think I heard 4 or 5 years. Oh, really?
He sent her a draft of the script. And see, so this is my question for you, Jamie, before we get into the story.
Yeah.
I want to know how that happened because there's nothing instructive about that. Right. If anyone who's listening to this podcast wanted to get their script to Toni Collette, that's not happening.
Yeah.
So the springboard for this, and he says it in his own, in the interview, one of the interviews that I'm talking about, he said this is the reason that the movie got made.
Mm-hmm.
He sent her the script.
Mm-hmm.
She read it. She loved it. She said, can we meet up for lunch? And they developed the character beyond that for like 4 drafts.
Oh, I had no idea.
With Toni Collette.
Okay.
See, she probably did deserve a nom.
I mean that's a lot of work. Awesome. Right? That's a lot of work. Yeah. But then her involvement was what was kind of like the final thing that got the momentum for the project, according to this one article I read that he was interviewed in.
Okay.
And Yeah, basically, he was like, was her involved. It was Toni Collette that got the movie
made. So typically, I've experienced this myself. Just as a writer, it's hard to get a script to somebody like that.
Yeah.
However, if he made friends through a short film, he might have had an agent or a manager. They might have a relationship with Toni Collette. More often than not, like when I've experienced this, it's usually a producer that has a relationship. Like, we just made a movie with Toni Collette. Okay. We've been trying to find something to do together. She'd love this, you know, something like that.
So, it's a butterfly effect of people that you can't control.
Kevin Bacon effect.
It's not something you can drive or control. It just kind of happens.
It kind of happens. Yeah. Usually it's producer.
So the answer out there would be make something that gets people's attention.
Yeah. I mean, that's just the answer for everything, though.
Yeah, I know. No, but I just thought it was very... I heard that and I was like, okay, well, of course.
For all I know, she could have been at Sundance when his short played and came up to him and said, I love your work.
Give me
Let's do something. Here's my email address.
That's very possible.
Isn't it crazy
too?
To think, though, know. Like, if Toni Collette didn't like this script, the guy would just be doing nothing.
And that's why that's something I want to talk about when we get into this, my concern.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, in my personal experience, like the couple times this type of thing has happened with me, it's usually I'm working with a producer. That producer's last movie was made with Toni Collette. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know, we're looking for the next thing. Let me send it to Toni Collette.
Yeah.
Usually it's a producer.
Okay. But you have to have, like...
My agent, when he does that, gets ignored for whatever reason. Or, you know, it's harder. I mean, if a director sends, a little better, you know, but for some nobody writer,
Because getting an attachment is a very helpful, but it's a whole other beast.
It is. Well, honestly, a lot of things at this level, even at this level, at the $10 million, $5 million, the Blumhouse level, they often need an attachment to get greenlit. So...
To be clear, you're talking about an attachment of a star.
A star.
Or director.
Or director.
Sometimes director works, you know, sometimes. But usually it's star. Like, even when the director, it's like, okay, well, who's going to be in it? And until you get that person to say yes, then it doesn't move forward. But once you get that person to say yes, usually then the ball
gets you in the room.
That gets you in the room. I don't know that Toni Collette is in the level of green lighting. Because usually it's based on these algorithms, overseas algorithms, and how many TV shows they've been in. And there's an exact number tied to these people. They're like, if you get Toni Collette, we will make $5 million on this movie.
Gosh, it's so like an IMDb ranking.
Yeah. And we
it's
will
all
give
about
you,
the art, baby.
I've actually seen these spreadsheets before. And there's literally a number attached to them that if you get this person, we will give you this much budget. So you have to kind of hit people of a certain budget level. I don't know. Sometimes they surprise you because a lot of it is based on television and how their movies perform overseas and stuff like that. So sometimes people you think would be on that list are not on that list. Like, you're like, well, that person's way more famous than Toni Collette. But Toni Collette might be on that list as a really high person. I don't really know.
She mostly does film work and stuff generally that buzzes around this area and this budget and stuff.
It's true.
It's not like Toni Collette's in like Transformers 5 or something.
I mean, Sixth Sense, man. This is a... You put these together.
That was also in the 90s.
No, I'm just saying, like her.
Yeah. It's her genre kind of thing. This like thriller, family thriller. Yeah.
The weird thing about it that I've noticed is like the United States of Terra could be the thing that pushes her over the edge. And you wouldn't even think of that, you know, some HBO show.
Because of how it plays internationally.
The way it plays internationally, the repeat business or whatever.
Like Russia just got it.
Exactly.
Yeah, they just got that. So
sometimes things like that can push them over the edge.
Well, thanks for sharing. I thought that was really important to make note of, that the success of this script was not based just on its quality. It was perceived quality from Toni Collette specifically.
Right.
Yeah, but a lot of Hollywood scripts aren't based. They don't get made because of quality.
I'd say that's true most.
I mean, let's be honest here. Yeah. That's not why.
The attachment.
We talk about stuff that just happen to be good on this show. Mostly.
Development.
Good call.
Development, is that not true?
Yeah.
Development is often about chasing the attachment. That's what development is about. And a lot of times the actor has a lot of leverage because of that. So they're like, well, I like this, but you have to make these changes for me to come on
board. Which is probably what she did.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'd also argue,
and good
too,
for her.
Yeah.
I'd argue too, because I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
But I'd also argue that people like Toni Collette and whoever else read the script, they also are humans that do the business and they liked it.
Yeah.
Sure.
So there, yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's not just that. It's like there are humans that liked it. We're like, I see this has potential.
Yeah.
They saw something to spend their time, to invest their time.
They're not just, suits that have no souls.
No, I know. I mean, look who else is in this movie. I Gabriel know. Byrne That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I agree with you.
He might just be working.
The kid from Jumanji.
Sorry, he's made an appearance twice on this episode.
That's right.
He's twice on this show.
Yeah, right. He's the Jumanji kid.
The Jumanji kid.
I feel like Gabriel.
His brother
is also
an actor.
I would assume that the Gabriel Byrne casting came later, and that's something he wanted because he's a fan of Exorcist 3 or something. You know what I mean? I just feel like he was like kind of horror legacy casting, type of thing. So.
One other thing, because
I'm going to guess, but
I normally wouldn't point this out, but I think it informs the discussion of this one.
Mm-hmm.
So 89% on Rotten Tomatoes, D+ on CinemaScore. Mm-hmm. But I think that kind of will inform some of the things going forward. So
polarizing.
It's polarizing. And it's one of these things that critics love. Maybe cinephiles love. Maybe the general mass broad mall audience is a little confused by.
Do you know who I think though who that reaction is from? Definitely it's, and I say this not as one but as horror fans, you know what I mean, like there's horror movies, like the stuff Jimmy makes, you're making stuff for horror fans, I feel like.
Right.
I know I don't want to speak too out of turn. I've been to several horror conventions and you know you notice things. The type of movies you're making, I think those kind of people love them. When this comes along and then you've and then this comes along and then you've got critics telling these people that go to these conventions and that are fans of this kind of stuff, like, this is a horror movie. And then they watch and they're like, meh. It's kind of like, get off your highfalutin type of horse. You know what I mean? Then there's that whole, the whole dichotomy of what is a horror movie with them.
Well,
like, it's not a horror movie. Jason 4 is a horror movie.
But
you know what I mean? Like,
I would also say there, and there's horror reviewers, that there's a certain type of movie watcher that wants to see something different. They don't want to have it be predictable. They don't want to, you know, so when they see a movie like this and it's breaking the rules, they can't predict where it's going. They can't figure, so they're actively engaged in the whole movie. Where there's another group of people that just want the cheeseburger.
Yeah.
You know, give me the cheeseburger.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not saying give me the cheeseburger is bad at all. I mean, I feel like we talk about great cheeseburgers.
That's what we do.
Best burgers in the nation.
Yeah, we talk about it. That's what this show is.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. That's well said though.
But
well
I
said.
Also
good segue, Jamie.
Good segue. There you go.
I'd also argue there's room for everything, but
it's good cuisine.
There's room for all plates of food.
You gotta try different things.
You gotta try different things. This is like a plate of snails that are cooked really well.
I think the
you know what I mean?
The one thing that's related to that, so I'm gonna kind of skip ahead a little bit here.
Go for it.
You know, and I talk about this one a lot because when I teach screenwriting, this is the first thing I say. There's this Robert McGee triangle of different types of stories.
Mm-hmm.
And at the top, there's a thing called an arc plot. An arc plot are all the movies we watch. You know, like Pixar and superhero movies. And generally speaking, I'll give you kind of the elements of arc plot. Arc plots have cause effect kind of things, like the Chekhov's gun sort of stuff.
Closed loops.
If you see somebody pull out a gun, somebody's going to shoot it in the end. People's actions cause reactions.
Mm-hmm.
Things are tied up in a bow at some point.
Home Alone's, your Galaxy Quests.
Yeah.
Bunch of stuff we've already done.
Yep.
Right? Yeah, like
the
stuff like that.
The bulk of
right.
movies
yeah.
out there. The you know
mainstream genre entertainment.
They usually have active protagonist, one active protagonist, so a hero trying to achieve a goal. They have linear timelines. They have consistent realities. They're not kind of weird and surreal and trippy.
Yeah.
So there's another thing called an anti-plot, which I won't get into, but they're the surreal and the trippy ones that really, they're more art films and they're more experiences and they really don't have storylines. They're just kind of like,
can you give us one example of that you're thinking of?
Well, I always say David Lynch, but even David Lynch kind of falls into some plot stuff.
Mini plot.
It's probably like Jean-Luc Godard kind of stuff and things like that.
Okay.
Fellini and there's some things like that.
They have zero interest in the aspect of an A to Z story.
Yes.
It's just a movie.
Terrence Malick, maybe a little bit.
Terrence Malick, a little bit, yeah.
It depends on what movie.
It's very linear.
It's linear, but it's also like, it's indescribable what's happening sometimes. You know?
I think Terrence Malick is a good call for somewhat.
He lives somewhere in there that is indescribable of where he lives. Yeah.
There's a spectrum here, too. Absolutely. I always say
like you said, the tone thing, just like your tone spectrum. There's mini plot. Thing. Yeah, it's good.
And you can see, like, sometimes you see the triangle, and they have movies like Barton Fink might float in the middle. Or something. So there's this other one. So we're not going to talk about anti-plot too much because it's hard to even break that one down.
And I don't think this is that at all.
This isn't that.
Anti-plot would just be an opinion discussion that we'd be just like, I liked it. I liked it. You liked it? I liked it. Yeah,
It's kind of like abstract art criticism.
Two hours of a fly on a wall.
I don't generally like saying this, but like anti-plot would probably be the stuff that's just like critic proof.
It is.
If you don't like it, it doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
I kind of put Lars von Trier into that type of stuff.
Yeah,
like,
I think you're right.
Everyone that hates his movies, I'm like, even hating him, you're wasting your time. Like, they just are.
Right.
Who's the guy who's supposed to make Dune? How do you pronounce his name?
The Blade Runner guy? Dennis Villeneuve.
The original.
Oh. David Lynch.
They made the documentary about him.
Jodorowsky.
Jodorowsky's
Dune. His movies.
Yeah, his movies are anti-plot.
Yeah,
perfect.
El Topo.
Yeah,
and I love his movies.
And I love his movies too.
I love his movies, but
I hate him.
But
I'm taking a strong.
I would never sit down to review his movies.
No, I don't
want to do that, and I don't know what I have to say. And I know what they mean to me, but that doesn't matter to anyone else.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
They're like going to an art gallery and just looking at a painting.
So they're just for the individual.
Last but not least, on the left-hand corner of this triangle is a thing called mini plot. And mini plot usually does have some kind of linear time frame. It might bounce around, but it still does. It does have consistent realities. But the thing it doesn't have, and these are a couple things almost in reaction to the arc plot, it's usually okay with coincidence. It doesn't care as much about cause effect. It can have something happen, but then it's not paid off, or just something can be paid off and it comes out of the blue. And oftentimes they have open endings. They just kind of, they end and you're kind of left to decide what happens. Yeah. In the end.
You can almost just call it real life.
Shit
just kind of happens in a meandering order until it ends.
And passive protagonists are another element of them. They're usually very passive. And generally speaking, the movies are about more internal conflicts and less external. I mean, that's really the bottom line.
It sounds like you're describing Hereditary.
And that's why. I bring this up today.
Really?
Yeah. Because
wow.
Hereditary pretty much checks all the boxes of this. And by the way, mini plot is usually independent cinema. They're usually not as... They're very rare to find a big blockbuster that's a mini plot movie, but some of them are the best reviewed movies.
Yeah.
Some of them are Oscar winners.
Oh, but like you said, sounds like because critics usually want to see something new. They don't want the cheeseburger.
And they feel more like real life. And honestly, like a movie I worked on, Lovely Molly, was kind of mini plot in some ways. It has elements.
You might want
to
pick that name you just dropped there, Jamie.
What's that? Yeah, exactly. So I think there's a good reason. And Eduardo Sanchez, who directed that, I think he's a fan of mini plot because I think he realizes the fakeness of the arc plot movies sometimes in horror movies. So he's kind of looking for something that feels real. So the shocks are more shocking.
And it works if you have like a comedic edge tone, something like that. But Lovely Molly doesn't have that.
No.
So, yeah.
Well, the mini plot I'm talking about.
I'm a fan of that movie, by the way, Jamie.
Yeah. Oh, I love Lovely Molly. Except for the thing, the ending, but I'll talk about that which isn't your fault. I just opened a big can of worms.
But when I was watching this movie, I was some ways thinking it reminded me of some of the stuff Eduardo likes and things.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, this movie is kind of like not all of his movies are like that. Like Blair Witch isn't really like that. Again, there's a spectrum of these things. So anyway, that's why I wanted to bring up mini plot.
And for me, and I think I completely agree with you.
I agree too. I don't disagree.
I'm not saying mini plots. Yeah,
but bouncing off of that,
I
think why this movie rubs me the wrong way, why it doesn't connect with me, is I think its third act it wants and tries to be your 5-point finale.
Yes.
And it hasn't done the work, laid the groundwork on the first two-thirds because it's a mini-plot movie to earn everything that happens your commercial. Because for the last 20 minutes, I really believe it is a commercially structured and constructed movie. And the ambiguity is gone, except when they give you the answers, which I'll get back, I'll get into more. Right. When they give you the answers, it gives you the answers the way that a mini plot movie would, but it's trying to deliver it in the way that your Save the Cat would.
And I should say too that
I think there's a lot of setup and payoffs in this movie. Though.
They're paid off like it's that, and there's nothing.
I mean, movies do that though.
Mini plot movies too. What they really are is they take arc plot movies and they skip some steps.
Yeah,
that is really what they do. Intentionally skip some steps to feel more like feel more like reality.
Right.
They just skip some steps. So when I'm a teacher of screenwriting and I specifically give a lecture at the beginning of the class that I'm going to teach arc plot and I'm going to demand them to do arc plots because I can't judge if they're just being lazy with mini plots or if it's intentional all the time. You know, so I'd rather they learn the rules of arc plot and then go make their next movie a mini plot, intentionally knowing why they're making the choices they make.
Yeah.
Because bad arc plot movies can look like people could intend to make an arc plot movie and just not realize that they have plot holes or coincidences or stuff. And they could just be like, this is kind of ruining the movie for me, you know, when you read their script or something. And they could shrug and be like, I don't know how to change it. And that could, their answer could just be, it's mini plot.
Yeah.
And it's not always the answer. So anyway, it's just trying to say that a lot of times there's a fine line between bad arc plot and mini plot.
So are we talking about our opinion on what Ari... What's his last name again?
Aster.
I don't want to say Aster. He's probably heard that. But
not laughing at your name.
Not sorry, dude. If you're never listening to this. We can't really. I mean, I did link you guys to the interview, and I don't think it answers this question, this mini arc plot question at all. Really,
he says one thing.
He says one thing, but I don't know if it. I really.
He says there are no rules.
Okay. Yeah.
And that.
Yeah.
Is.
Well, I agree with that, though. So.
Yeah. But that's why it doesn't make any sense. The things that unfold.
I guess. I mean, it makes perfect sense to me, though.
Rules in your specific world of your story.
One place. One place super quick, though, that I just wanted to point that can kind of start this. So just if you look at a log line for this movie, it's really hard to make a log line.
Yeah.
I copied the one off of IMDb, and here's their log line.
Yeah, give it to
me. It's, after the family matriarch passes away, the grieving family is haunted by tragic and disturbing occurrences and begin to unravel dark secrets. And that's pretty bad.
It's funny, I came up with something similar to that. Without reading that IMDb thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yours is really similar?
I wrote, when the mother passes away, Annie must keep her family together, because that's her goal.
But did she even try it, really?
No, that's the problem.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
That's the problem.
And that,
amidst terrifying secrets that are revealed about her family's history, which threaten the family union.
There's one thing.
That's the threat to the family unit, the family's history.
There's also one thing I wanted to bring up here, because having talked to a lot of friends about this movie, not interested in this like scripted conversation. I had several friends that think this movie has nothing to do or has no actual supernatural stuff in it.
I know. I've talked to people who think that it's all in her head.
That it's all in her head. And I mean, after reading that interview with him, I don't think they're right.
Not at all.
And also, but the disassociative, it loses her POV, so it doesn't really make sense.
But the dissociative disorder being hereditary through all of them is obviously a subplot throughout the whole thing. Right. You know, I'm just saying.
What he has said is that it's a commentary on mental illness.
Yes.
But
there are supernatural things happening.
Yeah, he says it in that interview.
But I've had friends say that it's not that at all. And I'm like, that's too much. You're going too far.
So the log line rules that I usually state in this, you know, hero, goal, obstacle, stakes. So I'm not even 100% sure if she's the hero or he's the hero, because he ends up
having... When you say he, who do you mean? Gabriel Byrne?
The son.
Oh, the son.
Yeah. His story starts later.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's weird.
It's like Shawshank.
Yeah. And she kind of vanishes. She disappears in the end. She's really not involved in the third act except being possessed, sawing her head off and stuff.
Right.
And he kind of comes in. And by the way, that's a common thing in mini plot where you really don't know who the hero is. There's no real goal.
That's okay. I'm fine with that.
Also, in the interview, which is something that I kind of guessed but didn't have answered, he says that Charlie was the demon from day one.
Yeah.
From her birth.
No,
which I think is, when I saw this like three times before not knowing that, and I was always on the fence of, is she evil or is she not?
Yeah. Well, we should talk about that too. Let me just finish the logline real quick. So hero
Sorry,
goal.
Sorry, I keep interrupting Jamie.
No,
there's so much to talk
there's
about.
There's a lot to talk about.
The hero
yeah.
goal, obstacle stakes. So there's no real goal that she has except like feeling better or denying it or whatever it is. It's not really like she has an active goal.
The reason that I didn't bring, of all the things I wrote down in this 6-page packet, I didn't write down the words from the monologue, but basically the opening monologue, I can't remember exactly what she says. She basically states the goal of hoping to keep her family together.
Gotcha.
And that's sort of a recurring thing from that moment. So it's like stated in the line. It's like, I think the intent is for her goal to be to keep her family together amidst all this.
But if I could, my answer to that is, like, the fact that she doesn't is, it goes to that, the family scene after Charlie's dead and they have that like really awkward family dinner.
Yeah, I love
where
that.
Mm-hmm. Where she blames them for not keeping the family together.
Right.
Right.
But, you know what I'm saying? Like, to her keeping the family together is she's putting it all on her family, not herself.
Right. She's absolving herself of the responsibility, which is passive.
Which is passive as well.
And she's very passive, and she makes her own little world in her, you know, her the dollhouse.
I mean, really, the action. Yeah.
And that works well.
Yeah.
The dollhouse.
Yeah,
stuff?
I'm fine with that.
Like, I like what he said in the interview too.
Absolutely.
That it's like they're the dolls of the.
Yeah, the
demons
he
are.
He says in the interview, you don't have to quote it. We know it well enough.
We read it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That the
they're
dollhouse
being played
is basically they are being played. Yeah, by the dark.
But
forces.
By the dark forces, like she's making the dollhouses.
I see.
Yeah.
So moving the pieces on the board,
which goes with the opening shot and everything that they're in a dollhouse.
And then in
so
the end,
that,
the house looks like the dollhouse. It even says that. In the script, it describes it. The house has become the dollhouse.
The problem in an arc plot that you have when you don't have a hero and a goal is people are sitting there waiting for that to click in because they're so used to arc plots. So the movie feels slow. You're waiting. That's when the story starts.
But I would say that this is the thing that we don't talk about on this podcast, which is that comes where the texture comes in, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where there is the filmmaking involved here. Fills in these holes we're talking about.
Does that
make sense to you guys?
It does.
I
agree with you.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
The acting performances, how it's shot, edited, it's really well done in those aspects.
I think it's great in those aspects, but I would also say there are other things that make it work that it didn't feel to me slow. Like I wasn't bored.
Before we go, before you continue, I want to bounce off of that slowness feeling.
Okay. No, go for it.
So one of my issues is the meandering. And my the reason that I have the meandering is because I think it wants and thinks it's ramping up urgency because they use the gallery show as like the emotional pressure cooker.
Right.
Except, and this is like one of my issues.
What's the stakes of that?
Okay. They don't even say the stakes.
Yeah,
it's
who cares? I can do another one.
But it's beyond that. Listen to the actual mechanism. Okay, usually when you're at the why now, you know, oh my God, right? The first scene, it's on page 7, he says, how long until the gallery show? She says, 7 months. He says, 7 months? She says, 6.5. Okay, here we go. Okay, it's going to be 6.5 months for her to feel pressure. She's feeling this, I mean, it's very light pressure. And then the next scene, she gets an email from the gallery owner, and she's like, hey, just wanted to know your progress. And the script states how much this stresses her out.
Yeah.
But there's no time on there of, hey, we're getting closer. It's not defined. The audience doesn't know how much closer we've come to that that thing that's supposed to be pushing her.
Yeah.
And then the next one, she has a post-it that's like, call Gallery about extending. But again, we haven't been informed of how much closer the show is. We have no idea whether it's a day away or whether it's months away. So, like, how are we supposed to feel the pressure beyond her just emotional reaction? Like, right. We need to know how much time is left in order to feel something. And then finally, the big climactic moment where she breaks down because of all the shit, crazy shit that's happening. But the end kind of straw that breaks the camel's back for her is she gets a voicemail for the Gallery, and this is on page 88, and it says, "Hey, the opening is 9 weeks away. How's your progress?"
Well,
which in text form doesn't, I like, once again, I'll say in text form that doesn't, I get what you're saying, but also what she's doing in that moment is way more important on screen, which what she's doing in that moment is recreating the funeral scene of her mother.
Right.
But
it's right. It's not going to work on paper as much as it is. This is also about grief and mental illness.
Right.
Which I'm, you know what I'm saying?
And it earns it in the movie.
It earns it in the movie.
From a construction standpoint.
No, it doesn't earn it.
There's no urgency there whatsoever.
I think you even left out a part, because I think they're like, we could always move it back if you want to.
Yeah, yeah. I broke it down to like the smallest.
So the point of that is that you're right. There's no, the urgency is not there. It's literally just her being reminded.
Right.
It's her at a breaking point internally, like you said, for arc.
It's an internal.
What ended up earning it was the performance and the filmmaking skills. The construction in the script is really weak.
Which is why this is such a hard movie aspect to talk about.
So like if you were to study this, if I were to tell a client, hey, go study Hereditary for their use of urgency, it would be doing them a disservice.
Well, you wouldn't do that.
No, yeah. But I'm just saying, like,
it's not prescriptive in that way.
Let me ask you guys this. I think it's fine that there's movies that you wouldn't use as teaching algorithms. Like,
no, I know.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, those are also movies that just are... But a lot of people are going to praise because you can't use them to teach anything.
And every point I want to bring up is like this.
Okay.
Yeah, well... I think is, I agree and disagree. So
in the middle, Jamie. Yes. Come on, man.
The cream.
Take a side.
Because I do think it does things to keep my attention. And I'll tell you, I think it's hard.
Yeah, no, it does that.
Script wise?
It's horror techniques are written into the script.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll give you an example.
I was just using that one.
Yeah,
thing
no,
from
I understand.
An urgency
I understand,
standpoint.
And that's a typical arc plot version. There's stakes. She's pressured. It doesn't have those.
Just fucking leave it out then.
It doesn't have those. But what
wouldn't want it out though. As a fan, I like it in there.
Gosh. So my favorite Chris McQuarrie.
I like that scene because it speaks to me to grief. I've been there.
Yeah, my favorite my favorite Chris McQuarrie quote is less information. More pressure, okay? And this definitely has pressure. You know, there's definitely cringeworthy kind of pressure that happens. That's
a great quote. I've never heard.
Yeah, it's a tweet. You know,
they needed a helicopter shootout. Like Fallout.
If Tom Cruise were only in this movie.
Inverse payments. Ethan Hunt fee payments.
So to go back to those horror techniques we've talked about before, which, there's Stephen King quote, first I'll try to terrorize him, or, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So... I won't, because I'll butcher it and I don't have it up. But generally speaking, the forms of horror, dread, which is kind of this unease feeling, this feeling that something's going to happen. Terror, which is something scary.
It's really light there, yeah.
And then gross out, you know, like the blood scenes, the chopping of the heads off, things like that. This movie uses all of them to an extent, but is really good in the early parts with the dread.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife was watching behind me this time because she likes movies like this. So she gave me both. She's the perfect person for the everyman viewer, so to speak. Mm-hmm. She was sitting there kind of yelling at the screen. Is she going to turn into a zombie? Is he going to come back from a dead? Is there a ghost? And then 50 minutes into the movie, and she wants me to answer, and I will refuse to answer. So she says, is she going to do this? Is she going to do that? 50 minutes of the movie.
I would love to see this scene.
Just sitting there watching. She's just asking questions.
She didn't know what the movie was about, which is why it's a mini plot movie.
Like,
let me ask you this. Is it because she was hoping for a cheeseburger?
She watches cheeseburgers. However,
it sounds insulting, but we don't mean it insulting.
No, no.
Yeah, no, we don't.
However, she was still interested in it. And the reason I think is because that dread aspect is making a promise. It is setting a contract that something's coming. So when you see the creepy guy at the funeral going, smiling.
That's good call.
When you see the fire being placed in the backyard that only Charlie sees. The fact that she's cutting heads off of birds. All these things are dread elements. We're feeling this unease. There's this sort of subtextual contract.
Yeah, when that's I point well to another put. Movie, I, that's I mean, yeah. really well put.
This
yeah.
Rosemary's Baby is brought up a lot
yeah.
it, with this movie, I think. And yeah. I definitely can see the parallels as far as the mm-hmm. dread is concerned. Because, you know, in Rosemary's Baby, everything seems off.
Yep.
And you don't know why, but it's a promise that something
yeah.
is there and it's moving slowly toward exploding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's pressure. It's that pressure that Chris McQuarrie's talking about.
But it's not in text form. It's not in feel. In text.
Though even yeah.
it's feel.
And yeah. they yeah. do
and
some,
it works.
It works in feel. I yeah. agree. I think the movie works off the page.
And they
not
on
the page. Does well, that make sense?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
but all these things are in the script, like to say the grave has been desecrated. That's in the script. That's yeah, stuff you have to write. You have to write dread in there. Yeah. There's visual techniques.
And that's the
too.
Stuff I almost like that's the one part of the movie where I'm like, I bet he wished he didn't even need to have to write that. Like yeah. you know what I mean? Like Gabriel yeah. Byrne talking to a guy that works at the cemetery. I was like, you could probably just have left that out. You know what I mean?
That's and that yeah.
But
that's
like I agree exposition.
With
you. You know?
I agree with you. All, yeah, yeah. It doesn't need to be.
All of the things, there, no. all of the things from the symbols in the wall to cutting off a bird's head to all these things, they're all in the script. These are storytelling devices that you put in the script. Because when you're reading the script and you see desecration of a grave, you're like, oh, okay, this is going to be one of those scripts. Yeah. And then you flip and then you see her cutting a bird's head off and you're like, ooh, weird. I wonder yeah. what that's going to pay off. And what it makes for...
Also, you don't know of her innocence versus her malice, or you know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. Why is she doing it?
It's yeah. planning all these questions, and questions cause tension. So my wife's watching it and trying to figure out, why is the bird head? So she's doing a whole game in her head. She's got an interactive
Did the
thing.
Questions get faster as the end came? Yeah. Like, wait, why? Yeah, why is she flying? Why is he on fire? What?
She's asking me those questions the whole time. Like, right. you know, what's, is it going to be? And she's like expressing all her internals, like about... Why is the girl cutting the bird's head off? Why is this happening? Why is this happening? And all those things are, you know, winding that rubber band, so to speak, mm-hmm. to the point where it has to break. And then it breaks at certain times that are the terror moments, like her smashing her head into the pole and getting decapitated. Then the break, it kind of breaks. And then you got to kind of rewind it. And then it becomes
which
more
they
about
do.
Which they do. And it more becomes a personal rewind at that point. It's less about the supernatural and more about yeah. Like the family,
you know,
and
yeah.
him.
I read one review that said the movie could have actually started at the funeral of Charlie.
I believe that's true.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I believe that's true.
I mean, like,
I would liked it better. I think.
Really? I like what we yeah. got with it, but I agree that could still work.
I think
you need a little bit more exposition
I think,
in places.
I think
but,
to an extent, the death was a hat and a hat. You know, it's kind of like which one was the one that really caused the grief.
Well, if the
yep.
movie
that's
that,
it, yeah,
that's
yeah.
true, and also.
Well,
the way the movie's played out, and I don't know if this is really a script thing, but the boy seems kind of inconsequential at first. You assume he's kind of meat for the slaughter.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought.
You assume that yeah. here's the
which he is, but not in the way you think.
Not in the way you think. You
which
think
is
he's,
great.
You think that oh, this demon's gonna fuck
it's
this kid up.
Great
and it's not, he's just gonna be
reversal of your preconceptions,
and he suddenly becomes the shit. You know,
I said
like
something
yeah.
positive.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. Good job. But you know what I mean? Like, I think you go into this movie and you think he's just that kind of side character
yeah.
sibling that no one really cares. Like yeah. the sister in Poltergeist, no one cares about her.
Right.
She's
yeah.
just there to scream at a certain moment yeah. and that's it. But he
and
turns.
She does a great job.
She does a great job. She does a great job.
I think the story right. kicks into gear with Charlie's death.
Yeah.
Because that's when the mother needs some outlet to really seek. That's when she starts really going to that grief counseling and meets the woman and needs to contact
her. But you wouldn't
her.
Have that dread of him having to experience his sister dying. Like and him yeah. it's his fault. Like
well,
that adds this whole other level that I think most people were like debilitated watching.
Yeah. Right. I agree.
That,
I agree.
Right. Yeah.
There's also an extent. There was a part
that's the part that I don't believe. That's
also
why my issues.
What the part that yeah. that they are
keep
they
going.
That the audience didn't
there.
Experience.
Well, I was
going
to say
that he would not do the things that he did.
Yeah, there's a little part of me that thinks that the writer came up with a pole idea and forced it in the script because to me it felt a little forced. So
supposedly it's based on a true story.
Based on a true story, it felt like one of those nuggets he read and he was like, "I got to get there no matter what."
Yeah,
and so he put the peanut allergy in. Hey, they better not have peanuts in. You know, it's just a random thing that doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
And then, by the way, another dread thing. My wife picked up on it right away. you know, because she's freaked out about peanut allergies and stuff. She thinks it's terrifying. So the whole peanut mixing scene is like another dread moment. You know it's coming.
Yeah.
Well, and it, you know, I like that. Because I love when movies are just excessively blatant.
Absolutely.
I think you're not even trying to mysteriously say that she's going to have peanuts in like the next 10 minutes. She's eating peanuts.
I'm going to interject with another one of my issues. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to be very instructive about this because about the ticking, the urgency thing. Okay, so another thing that I encounter all the time that I feel that this script does is I read script after script after script where characters make choices for the sake of the story, not because they would actually do it based on the characters that you've seen. Okay, so when we meet Charlie, she's eating a fucking candy bar, which she wouldn't be if she had peanut allergies. They wouldn't. But anyway,
they make candy bars without peanuts, though.
I'm just saying, like, okay, I have a nephew who has a deathly peanut butter allergy. I see him once a month. I have an EpiPen in my house. I have an EpiPen in my car. My sister has EpiPens in her house, in her car. Her brother would have an EpiPen. She would have an EpiPen. Justin, my nephew, he's 12. He carries around an EpiPen with him.
So you're saying this family kind of sucks?
No, what I'm saying
is... No, but they do.
No, let's look at the evidence, okay? Let's look at the evidence.
I think there's sufficient evidence to say this family sucks at taking care of things.
No, but let's look at the evidence. I agree with you, but it contradicts itself because on page six, he grabs her and says, "There's no nuts in that," right? There's no nuts.
Yeah,
and then on page 15, Peter, the brother, says, "There's no nuts in them," right? Nothing has changed in the events of the story since those worries to make anybody behave any differently.
But Peter is also at a party with all of his friends, and he wants nothing to do with his sister.
Then
the mom says,
"Why don't you take your sister?"
Which was also weird.
So
that part's a little.
So here's why I don't believe the choices, Bob. That's what I'm saying. I don't believe the choices. Just let me keep talking. Why would you, as a mother of a child who has a deathly peanut allergy, deliberately push your son to take her to a party where you know, based on what her conversation with her son, that there's going to be drugs? That there's going to be drinking. She knows that her parents are going to, that the kids at the party are going
to
be drinking.
That part was a little weird.
Having actually worked with people with DID, that makes perfect sense to me.
DID?
Dissociative disorder.
So you're saying her mental illness absolves the choice.
I've actually, in the last year even, I've worked with people with DID and they change personalities, but you don't know.
So you're saying she swapped from the worry mother to the mother who doesn't give a shit within 2 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, no, that can happen too, in real life.
Okay.
That can seriously happen in real life.
But strangely, she seemed to be pushing the girl almost to screw her son's chances up.
Right.
Like, that's what it seemed like.
Keep your brother from fucking a girl at the party.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
I didn't read it like that.
I read it
like she just wanted her daughter to be involved.
I read it that my son is gonna go be in trouble making it to the party if he brings his sister. I'm not gonna have sex, I'm gonna put a ball and chain on him.
That's basically what I read. That never even entered my mind.
The dangers that come with that are drugs, drinking, and potential peanut allergy.
It's inherent
to the situation.
I have a bigger problem.
Yeah.
Who bakes a cake? What teenagers bake a cake at a party?
I'm just kidding.
And that's so. Anyway, I
can believe they bought
look,
a cake.
I don't believe the choices that the characters make. I just like time. There's so many choices made in this story that I believe the writer made, but based on the character that he showed us would not make those choices.
I feel like Toni Collette is a terrible mother. She is, though. At every turn, she sucks.
I agree with you, but I'm just saying that
is part of her character.
If he had cut out the line where Annie said, "Are you sure there's no nuts in there?" it would have worked for me because she would have been shown as a mother who doesn't give a shit. But he took the time to show us that she's hypervigilant about the allergy.
It almost would have been a way
she's
to fix that.
She's hypervigilant around Gabriel Byrne.
Is make it Gabriel Byrne she be the one that was concerned.
Yeah.
And she's like,
I think she's like, whatever.
The key you to gave her chocolate?
The key to understanding this movie to me is Gabriel Byrne. That he's the key to understanding the whole movie. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the way that the way she acts around him, she almost views him as like a foundation. Because she is literally emergency alert. Okay.
Oh. Shit.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was
No, I'm saying like she uses him as a grounding force.
Yeah.
So she looks to him. When she's around him, she's vigilant. When she's not, she's a terrible mother, and she is completely in her own world.
Right.
Which I think the movie definitely supports.
It proves that,
I mean,
for sure.
Even her job is her being in her own world, you know, until he breaks that bubble and she brings her back to reality every time.
I think the evidence, though, that you're – or these things that you're showing, they're kind of why I feel like the pole thing was something they were aiming towards.
Yeah.
And they had to kind of get us to the pole thing.
He was like, I need to have the characters make decisions.
Spots, to get her head out of that window.
Those spots, I don't believe those decisions were proven.
Those spots didn't feel
moments.
The most organic to me. They felt more writerly. Like somebody putting them in
there. That's what and that's what I'm saying.
They didn't
saying
have a subtleness.
From a learning standpoint, which, like you said, this is not a teaching
script. But I'm saying don't use this to teach people anything.
I know.
Yeah,
well,
I wouldn't.
Okay, well, the subtext of all my concerns is this. A lot of people listening to this podcast are trying to take lessons from the things that are successful.
Yes, they'll try to copy Hereditary.
So what I'm saying
is
this. Let me give you an example. So Get Out was like the seminal big original horror story hit recently.
Right.
The vast majority of horror scripts that I'm sent from amateurs are inspired by Get Out did. And I see Get Out's influence in it. It is, horror stories about marginalized people and like
social issues.
Social issues, sure.
But the way the story unfolds, it's a Get Out copy, but done in its.
Get Out's very art
is
plot.
That this is going to spark and inspire a whole bunch of people taking
Jimmy,
the wrong steps.
That's a good thing to say. And I don't think you're wrong, but I think that's a bullshit thing to talk about the script with. I'm just saying, like, it doesn't, those people are all hacks, and it doesn't matter what that inspires.
You're saying, fuck them, let them be hacks.
They shouldn't be trying to make Hereditary ripoffs. They should make their own movie.
But that's people get inspired by the
things.
But I'm
saying not to like the movie for that reason is very odd to me. It's like, you know, okay, so?
No, that's not why the only reason I don't like the movie.
I know, but that reason. But that reason. That singular reason.
But I'm saying, like, you know, as far as,
like. Let them be hacks. They're not going to do anything anyway. I'm daring you.
Jamie, I would love to hear your perspective on this. I think if you were not a writer-director who didn't make a viral short that got the attention of Toni Collette, and you wrote this script constructed this way with the skill level displayed on the page alone, I don't think that this script would go anywhere.
It's really hard to say. Like,
yeah, it's impossible.
It's really hard to say because some people might be attracted to different elements of it.
Yeah.
You know, they might be attracted to that family dynamic and think this is an elevated horror script.
Elevated horror.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, you know, something that would attract Toni Collette.
But that's what people are going to call it, man. Like,
that's
going to exist.
It's better than horror.
It's
elevated.
They just mean it's not. It's not a slasher movie, pretty much.
Honestly,
that's what they mean.
Yeah. Honestly, when I hear elevated horror, I think, and this is kind of a script that fits in that mold, I think it means it could attract Toni Collette. That's my definition of elevated.
That's a great description.
You know, so when I hear elevated action, you know, or something, it means it could attract some dramatic actor as opposed to just Jason Statham or something like that. Or The Rock.
I would love to see The Rock in this.
Exactly.
You know what we haven't talked about at all? I printed this out before you added the whole aspect of agency and inevitability.
Which is something
let's
that
talk about
I want to talk about that.
Can we in order to do that?
We've got so many things.
No, can we unravel? I just want to give the kind of, let's explain the ending. Because I think that's part of the fate part of it.
What do you mean?
So let's describe what happened, like. And you started to go into it with Charlie being the demon.
Actually want to talk about what
just
happens in
quick.
This movie, because people don't kind of how many videos have I seen on YouTube ending explained? Yeah. But then again,
I didn't even watch those.
Oh no, I haven't. I didn't watch them. I'm saying I see them.
I'm not,
in my scrolls.
And I just super quick.
What happened?
Yeah. So I think Annie's mother was it?
Annie's mother is a member of a cult to raise a demon called Payman, who is one of the 12 kings of hell.
That's right.
Right.
She had a baby that she didn't want to have and was going to abort it, because it was a boy, mm-hmm. and she sensed that her mother, but I don't think she knew her mother was in a cult at all, because she's right. shocked when she takes mm-hmm. the papers out. But she says she kept the baby away from her mother.
Yeah.
But then she let her have her next baby, Charlie.
Let her breastfeed the next baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the assumption is that somehow Payman came into Charlie.
Charlie was, yes, Payman was
Payman
in.
Existed inside of Charlie.
The fact that, I hate that, maybe I shouldn't have shared the interview thing, because he does say that straight up. He's like,
yeah, he does.
Payman is in Charlie the whole time. Yeah. He has displaced the soul of a little girl.
Which, in some ways, that bugged me a little bit, because that's where the rules get clunky, yep. and it feels like he retrofitted that to make yeah. it all work.
And
that was
can
the
I,
one spot.
Can so, I bounce
and,
off?
And that's an interesting thing to talk
yours?
About, because we never talk about interviews.
Yeah,
after the yeah. fact, you know what I mean. Yeah, never do that.
No, this is something he's letting you piece together
yeah.
on your own.
Yeah,
which is
he does say in the interview a lot. I don't want to say. I don't want to explain that.
Here's but. I actually got an exact quote from him about his. He said, "I tried to riddle the movie with clues, and ultimately, you're only given shards and fragments of the whole story. But I wanted to make sure you had enough to figure out what happened. I didn't want to spoon feed the viewer."
Okay,
and I. Don't think there's enough in there to figure out what happened while watching the movie for the first time.
I do think, though, mini plot...
I figured it out by, like, two, though.
It shouldn't take you two times
no,
to
I disagree. I've watched so many movies I love where it took me several times.
And
I haven't.
Oh, okay. I mean, like, there's plenty
the
of movies like that.
Yes.
You do. That's yeah. what I was saying in the when we talk about this. I was like, you do, and that's okay.
Yeah.
This is not that.
Yeah.
This was not a Jimmy for Jimmy George.
But I think it thinks it's the cheeseburger by the end.
I don't agree. I don't agree there. I still don't agree.
Well, let's get to the end and we'll figure it out.
Let's get to the end. Sorry, Jamie.
No
worries. Me and Jimmy are arguing over Jamie. I'm sorry.
No problem. I do think there's...
I love you, Bob.
I love you,
there's
too.
A certain,
it's fine.
There's a certain type of mini-plot horror that doesn't really... That kind of says it's scary because we'd never understand it in real life. You know, it just seems like weird. You know,
which
and I think that's kind of what this is trying
relevant.
To do.
Yeah, the intangible.
It's Lovecraftian.
It's the intangible, which I love.
Yeah.
Right?
You
but guess what? Lovecraft doesn't give explanations. This one does, and it's half-assed.
It's half-assed because he usually doesn't deal with humans solely. This is, you know what I mean? This is about people more than it is about payment.
Okay. Well,
just don't explain it. Well, just don't even try.
But it's enough that it can make money too. There's a reason this works, Jimmy, and it's because there's just enough in there. It's just enough shards. That's why this works, and that's why people kind of loved it.
People love it, dude.
That's what I'm saying.
People love it.
People love it. Okay. And if
I'm
going to
get fucking crucified for this podcast.
No, you're not. No one's going to care. But what I'm saying
all
is
the
if you took away.
D-plus cinema score people will love you.
But if
I'll
this,
be like, you speak
guys,
our language.
If this was like a Lovecraft story on screen, just straight, I don't think people would like it that much. They'd be like, I don't know what just happened.
That's a good call.
This has just enough to keep
it's
you interested.
Call.
Yep.
It's That's just like dangling the carrot enough where you go, I'll keep going.
So,
you know,
so
sorry,
okay.
Go ahead.
So Charlie's inside. Eventually, the.
Jamie's exhausted.
I'm sorry, Jamie.
No,
I'm sorry.
Grandma's dead.
We're
so
giving
the,
Jamie urgency.
Yeah. Grandma's dead, so the cult now thinks they can get their claws and switch places between Charlie and what's the kid's name? Peter, I think.
Peter.
Yeah. So they want to get payment into Peter.
Which I'm assuming also that they try to use some sort. I'm assuming they have some sort of spell power.
Right.
Yeah, there's spells in the book.
There's
actually
there's spells in the book, and
spell.
Like the stuff with the pole and everything.
Yeah, there's a little sigil on it.
As fake as a lot you guys say that feels to me, I was always kind of assuming all those the fakeness was kind of being guided.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like evil forces were actually pushing.
I agree.
Let's make a cake tonight. How about some walnuts?
Yeah.
Why do they have no clue why they want? But everyone's like a puppet master being moved.
That
you know?
sigil on the pole, just like you said, it's the. It's the dollhouse or whatever, moving the pieces in the dollhouse.
It's
the
so ungodly obvious.
Yeah.
That it has to mean, that the obviousness has to mean something.
Yeah,
that's what I was trying to say.
I think
does that make sense?
I think that's creating the tension inside the viewer.
I like that point of view, that what you just said.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I obviously get to how obvious everything is.
Yeah.
You don't show a shot of chopping nuts.
Yeah.
And not realize, like, come on, dude.
Right.
There has to be. This guy's obviously not an idiot. You know what I'm saying? Okay, go ahead. Sorry, Jamie.
So, no worries.
No, it's intentional.
So,
I know.
Yeah.
So she gets killed because the cult cast a spell or something on the pole and everything else or whatever. I mean, they're puppet masters in this.
The pole's magnetic and it draws
pulls magnetic
in.
To human flesh.
It's got all these inner workings and stuff.
She gets her head smashed off. Though there is a part of me that the demon is living inside of her. Is she a demon at that point, or is it like buried inside of her? And she's still a kid.
I would say it's like kind of an Exorcist deal where it's at like the beginning of the Exorcist. Like he's kind of just in there making her sick.
Mm-hmm.
He made her whatever disease she has.
Yeah.
But he is not fully rendered.
He's not saying, bleh,
he's not, yeah, I am payment. Yeah, he's not doing that. Right.
I'm going that to.
Right. Right.
Maybe the prequel will have
that. I think it's still the mind, the physical mind of a little girl. Right.
Right. Yeah.
Who doesn't know that she is.
I think she's a vessel that's trapped in her own body.
She's kind of a midway point. Yeah.
So then they say expel to the guy and they do some seance-y thing, which we don't totally understand, but it's their spells at work. And that brings the demon back into the house. And then he starts whatever the expel thing is. He's starting
to do
get
that.
Infected. And I,
the cult puts the body in the cellar.
Yeah.
At some point, we don't see. We just assume.
Right.
Right. Attic?
Attic.
In the
sorry,
attic.
In the attic. Yeah.
I was like, I missed
that. There's a cellar? No.
And then at some point, I guess, him jumping out the window, he kind of dies and is reborn. Or
he survives.
He survives.
Yeah. He survives. Okay. Yeah.
I wasn't sure if he was meant to be dead.
It's supposed to be.
It's a little loose.
It's a little loose.
And then when he's at that point,
broken enough that he can be taken
at
over.
That point, though, in any script, it's kind of like shooting the thing in Jaws. Yeah, like, we're this far.
Yeah.
You're just going to have to, if you're either going to be with me or not.
By the way, I love the last 20 minutes of this movie.
Well, because you said it was like the normal. It's the cheeseburger part of the movie.
And then he shows up. The cult's there all worshiping him. He puts it all together. His family, their heads are chopped off and they're bowing. And he seems like he's in a mix, like he's still himself. Almost maybe like Charlie was.
Just like, yeah.
Like, where he knows something's like, inside of him, but he's changed. So he's like looking at them. So it's not like Peter's gone. He's just like has a resident inside of him.
Yep.
It's not like the demon just completely takes
and she, that's, has a look. That's foreshadowed. And the three, would not call this a setup in the therapy session when Toni Collette, Annie says, her brother killed himself because her mother was trying to put other people inside of him.
So, but
straight,
so,
I mean, that's
right.
Blatant.
That's
yeah.
right. And yeah. and the
blatant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, now we get an answer for
everything
that.
Everything is so, like, everything is so blunt with the sigil being a three-headed, you know, it's like three heads. And then the thing that they needed to do the spell is
It's like a trinity.
A trinity of decapitations.
Right.
All that.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. No.
That's not my issue.
I know. But so I'm just it's all so blunt. The bluntness is what I'm pointing out.
Here's what I would say. It's really a movie. We're watching the train wreck. Nobody tries to steer away. We just watch it to the end. And then we realize all the pieces of the train wreck to an extent.
Right.
That's
what And we realize. So it becomes a story. Very mini plot. Mini plots are one of the only places you see just fate. You know what I mean? Like, there was no way they could have gotten
out
of this.
I know you didn't read the interview, but he talks.
That's what he says.
It's pretty much what he says. That's a good segue.
Yeah.
So
it becomes about fate. And you don't see that in arc plot. Arc plot hates fate. They like cause effect.
Yeah.
They're like, you can change your existence. You can overcome evil. You can be better. If you don't learn the lesson, you might die. But, you know, this movie is, if you were born into the suck sandwich, you're going to get killed.
And sandwich, hereditary. He says, he confirms in that interview, he's like, the way he sees this is that they could never win, which now, and I know what you're saying is that that's not a story. It's because they're just barreling towards inevitability. But the difference being is that I think it's about awareness and perception of the audience.
And that's the good thing to talk about.
Yeah. You know, that's exactly what I want to talk about, because if what we're watching is a family that was inevitably screwed from day one, the only thing that makes it a story is the fact that we don't know what's going to happen and they don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
All the forces around are the only thing that we can't see that know what's
going to
happen.
So the thing that
it's only about awareness.
The thing that brings me to, like, so that's what I go to with mini plot movies. Okay, so what's the impact of it on me? Is it just sitting in the theater getting the thrill and the tension of it?
A little bit.
Or is there a deeper thing to be taken away? And that fate, often there isn't. Fate is like, don't worry about it. Fate, you know?
Yeah.
Is there something more to it that we should ruminate on? Like, does it mean something about mental illness? Is mental illness passed from grandma to family? Right. And what does that mean to us? Does it just mean if you're born to mental illness, your life's going to suck?
They're screwed. Yeah. You're screwed.
Is that, and is there, is that it? So it's very...
So I don't think, I don't from know his that, own words, from I his can own words, comment he can say on it. Yeah. That. Okay. He said, with this film, because I think it's pretty obvious even before hearing this quote that it's about grief and trauma and God, recovery. Yeah, right. You said, it's really, really obvious and blunt. He said, with this film, I wanted to make a film about people suffering. I wanted to make a film about grief and trauma. I wanted to make a film that was honest about those things. I feel like there's a trend of American domestic dramas and tragedies where a family suffers a loss. Things get hairy for a while. It gets tumultuous and communication breaks down. But ultimately, the bonds are strengthened. Everything's going to be okay. People have been brought together by the experience. And there's,
man, that's the dinner scene.
And he said, and there's nothing inherently false about that idea, but that's not always the case. Some people will never recover. So it's about saying you could never recover from grief.
That's kind of the...
It's about saying that it can destroy you.
It can destroy
you. It's not saying it always does. It's saying it can.
It can, yeah.
Yeah. And that is the dinner scene. She's literally saying, this was useless.
Yeah.
Like, if Charlie died... And it brought us together, made us better, made us learn. But it didn't. We failed. And then the third act happens.
Let's go to the classroom scene.
The classroom scene. Okay, so we have a running theme here that the classroom scene is usually where the theme is stated.
Yes.
So let's see what it is.
Hearing that and reading the... Yes.
There's two classroom scenes, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't think anything said about... Yeah,
the bird clunks on
the
window.
So this classroom scene.
We're talking about the Peter classroom.
Just conveniently happens to be talking about fate.
Point of order, though. Let's remember that the teacher is one of the cult members.
Nice one.
Like, don't forget that.
I fucked that up. I don't remember that.
The teacher is
one of... Cursing a lot in this episode. I apologize.
That's okay. It's fine. This is rated R podcast. But it is
Raiders,
the teacher...
My mother-in-law after dark.
Guff.
Oh, did she listen?
Who knows?
Oh, but the teacher is one of the cult members, so...
She's watching.
Wow.
Yeah, so know that.
So, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
In the end of the... What do we say about the classroom, just for reiteration?
Oh, yeah, usually in a classroom scene, some teacher says something or writes something on the board that is kind of the theme stated.
Yeah.
It happens all the time.
If you're trying to figure out the theme of
a
movie...
It's a great expositive scene to have,
just
though, right?
Go to the classroom. Okay, right. So upon bouncing off that, there's two things. When the scene opens, there is something written on the chalkboard. It says it in the script. Themes, underline. Escaping fate, period. Relationship between knowledge and responsibility, period. No man considered fortunate until he is dead, in quotations. Those are the three things that are written on the chalkboard, which above them says themes.
There you go.
So there you go. So that's probably what this movie's about.
That goes with the bluntness theme, too. Yeah.
And then
you must be a podcast listener.
Yeah, yeah.
And then at the end of this scene, after the teacher's trying to argue what about inevitability and versus free will, the last student in the scene says, "I think it's more tragic because let's see what the teacher says." The teacher says, "Is it more tragic if it's inevitable than or that if the characters have agency?" And the student says, "I think it's more tragic because if it's all just inevitable, that means the characters have no hope and that they never had hope because they're just pawns in this horrible, hopeless machine." I mean, there's your name right there.
I mean, literally, straight up. At least we know the interview was honest.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's great.
I mean, he was being 100. I don't think that proves...
You don't need a commentary.
No, but that proves that he's not making up after the fact. The fact that that's in the movie and that the interview says that.
Very intentional. Yeah. Very intentional.
No, it's intentional, yes.
So one of the things between mini plot and this arc plot thing, arc plots are often the theme is the way we wish the world would be or kind of the ideal thing, we suppose. Whereas mini plot
happy endings.
Mini plot tends to be, this is life, honest. Deal with it. You know, it sucks.
I mean, that's fucking honest.
It's very, say.
It's also
things suck sometimes.
I mean, I don't. Literally. Here's the thing: is like obviously I've been the defender on this episode. But I don't know if there's a lot of stuff in this movie that I love that I don't know that if I wasn't me, if I would love. Does that make sense? I've dealt with people with mental illnesses all my life, and I know my share fair share of grief.
Yeah.
And I can tell you,
those things connected with you.
I can tell you that there's very few movies that know how to do grief well. And this movie knows how to do it well.
That's what I would say mini plot movies often do is you right. look up and so you say, I know that this is truth. I agree. High five.
It like, yeah, like the structure might not work in that way, but it works in like a tangible way.
Gotcha.
With a connective tissue with real life, I guess. Yeah. You know,
so this is why and this is kind of a good way to wrap this up, but that's kind of why I'm in the middle. I agree with many of Jimmy's points.
I don't disagree with Jimmy, though. I want to make that clear.
You're saying that doesn't make it bad for you.
Yeah. At all. It doesn't even matter to me. Yeah.
Aside from the great performances in this movie and the great editing and shots and all that
and
stuff.
And I think it's a well-made film.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's shot great.
I had a pilot, this guy would be the first guy I'd hire to direct it. You know, I'd say, you come in and bring that Hereditary magic and let's do it.
Yeah.
I actually think the story strangely works despite all the advice I give on these other podcasts. It works really well because of that dread element, because of the interactivity I feel like it's an interactive film in that I'm thinking the whole time and making these guesses.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
And
I'm just not sure when I got to the end if I was like, if it all added up. It was kind of like Lost, like watching Lost.
That's I'll talk about what, because we're trying to wrap it up, but I do have one more.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's about, okay.
We can talk about the things. Keep going. It's
bonus
fine.
Bonus time.
Bonus time. No, that Lost, dude, this is.
I never watched Lost, just so you guys know.
This is season. Do you mind if we spoil? This is season six of Lost.
Yeah.
That's what this is, which is.
For people who didn't watch.
For five seasons, Lost, you've articulated this before in statements about the promises that Lost made with their setups of the various ambiguities, the mystery. Like we're promised answers by all the events that happen in the first half of this, first two thirds of this movie. And then the answers that were given are like nothing.
Yeah.
And for it, I'll give you I'll just talk
You said they aren't nothing or they are nothing.
They are not. They are just. It's this.
Okay.
With nothing behind it.
Okay.
To contextualize what that is.
Here's the way I'm gonna
support it. But go ahead.
Please support that before I respond.
Here's the very short way I sum up. No, I'm not sure this movie has quite to the level of Lost irritant to me because I didn't. You know, it makes sense.
Right. Yeah.
But here's the way I view Lost. Lost is like playing a game of Clue, and then when you finally pull the cards out in the end, they're Pokemon cards.
Yeah.
You're like, what the hell was I doing?
I spent 5 years.
I'm going to let you finish. I don't think that this movie feels like that.
It's not totally.
I don't think this feels like Pokemon
cards. When I was writing down I almost wrote, it's like season six of Lost, didn't.
But I mean, what he just said, though, I don't agree that this feels like
The reason
it definitely feels like there's like,
hang on.
The reason I brought it up was because I the whole time was very interactive in the mystery, but then in the end I was like, wasn't going to guess that mystery. And
that's
it's not
no,
that
you
great.
It's not it's, possible to.
It's fine. I was thrilled by the end.
Yeah,
I was actually thrilled by the end. I thought the end was really cool
me
and
too.
Had great imagery. But the two sides. The interactive side didn't, like, to me, the interactive side was, is this in her head?
You're saying,
is it a ghost?
Exactly.
Is it a this?
You're speaking
right, but
exactly
then
what
said,
I feel.
If I cut the third act off, if I cut, like, we watched it together, and I paused it right before, like,
the shit hits the fan.
The shit hit, like, yeah, the shit, I'm trying to think
I,
of the
I
moment.
Would have guessed it was in her head somehow, based on the title.
But would it be completely, especially considering the friend who showed her the, Joni. Especially considering everything that happened with Joni right up to the before the shit hits the fan, you're telling me that would all have not clicked in your head that something like a cult was happening?
No,
and everything. You know what I'm saying?
It clicked in my head. Yeah. I'm saying they put all this effort and then the answer. Okay, let me just.
Yeah, if anything, I'd say that is kind of what I thought the answer.
That's
was
exactly what I thought the answer
right.
was.
So it was,
but
just kind
that's
of...
not good.
Yeah,
that's what we are saying.
But that's not the Pokemon
what we are
card
saying
thing.
Is
guys,
that answer.
I don't agree
this,
that that's
this a, it's a cult that we obviously knew
that's
was true. Coming.
Yeah,
is
yeah.
not a good answer.
You see what you
I know
it's
what
not
you're
a
saying,
satisfying
yeah.
answer.
He, but no, he. Yeah, but I'm saying that's
that
the point of the movie.
It
was
different than the Pokemon card thing.
It is different. Yeah,
but the thing is, I was sort of frustrated that the game I was playing wasn't the game I thought I was playing. Right. That's the part. Okay. That's the part I'm trying to say.
It turns out you were right.
Yeah.
I was like,
M. Night Shyamalan didn't direct this.
But as far as I always go, what does the evidence give me? Right. I just look at the movie and what are the questions it poses that allow me to answer? And then what does it give me that allow me to answer those questions?
Yeah.
There's tons of great payoff setups and payoffs with, like you said, the creation of dread questions. All of that is really well done and paid off in really cool ways. My issue is not that. My issue was with King Payman, and that is, it's all payoff, no setup. The only clue is the sigils, which tell you nothing. What are those sigils? Mm-hmm. Well, they are the sign of Payman. That's like fact. How are we supposed to know? And then the only other evidence that would let you try to connect the dots about Payman specifically are on page 11 for 1 second and literally one line in the script, notes on spiritualism, a book. She picks it up and it says she decides to put it down.
Right.
There's like nothing, orientation.
It says that in
the
script.
So your question as an audience member is, what's this book about and what does it have to do with the whole mystery? Well, guess what? The entire fucking movie goes by and we're never shown anything else. Here we are on page 100. So the whole fucking movie has gone by and our next clue is the reveal of King Payman. There's nothing in between. It's King Payman. And our only orientation about what King Payman is and who he is an underlined passage in a book that says, Payman is male, thus covetous of a male human body. That's it.
What else would you want, though?
Who is he? What the fuck is
this? I don't
want
to know that. I wouldn't want to know that.
That's all that matters.
No, I don't want to know that. Who he is doesn't matter at all. I only need to know what was happening to the family. That's what I want to know.
But who? Who is he?
It's a demon. It doesn't matter. It's a fake demon that he made up. It doesn't matter.
Dude.
But that doesn't matter to me at all.
By the way, people that love Lost at the end of the season actually use the same thing. There are people that love the ending of Lost. Some of us don't.
Yeah,
and I didn't watch Lost because I would hate Lost.
No,
to me that couldn't be more lazy or disrespectful of my time.
I don't see that at all. This movie feels so respectful of my time.
I would view it a little differently. It's that then when I go back and view all the importance of these clues, like what does hereditary mean? What is the mental illness side? How does that affect? That's the part to me that didn't add up. Like,
what does it have to do with King Payman? Exactly.
What's the sleepwalking? What's this? What's that? You know, I'm doing
all
that.
How does it add up?
Right. But you're saying you want to know
the explanation
actual demon.
And the explanation is King Payman, who wants to take over from this sentence in this book, a human vessel.
But didn't we
talk?
But didn't we spend the last hour talking about this? Isn't that the point of the movie?
I'm so fired up.
I know, but I feel like now we're talking about this subject like you're disregarding everything we just talked about. Like
saying it made me feel all those things. It succeeded so much at the good stuff that when I got the answer, it was so emotionally unsatisfying.
We've already established the movie is being guided by mysterious forces, and it's also mimicking mini plots, which are mimicking real life.
It's like
life.
The end of a Stephen King book. Like,
what I'm saying is, I feel like we've already talked about all this, and that the King Payman stuff should make more sense now that we've talked about it. You know what I mean? What do you want? You want King Payman to show up and describe who he is and what's happening?
No, but I want to know who. I mean, you know? It's like saying who's Darth Vader. It doesn't matter.
But King Payman is a demon. It doesn't. They could have called him just a demon. It doesn't matter.
I would have loved that. That to me would have been great.
Okay, that's a word. It doesn't matter.
But
by giving him a name, if it was Satan, would you feel better if it was just Satan?
Absolutely.
Well, I don't agree. That's really weird. Jimmy.
Because that's Rosemary's Baby.
That's really weird to me that it matters. That
to me and Rosemary's Baby, it makes sense.
Come on, Jamie.
Satan. I don't need to.
As someone who I know is a fan of Buffy, do you care about demon names?
No,
You have an episode about that demon to contextualize who he is.
Yeah, but it's also a comedy show. I'm just saying, like, we don't. The actual character of King Payman does not matter to this movie.
I'm realizing.
It just matters there's a cult worshiping a demon. That's it.
That's fine.
That's
I would have much rather just
leave
him blank.
But that's what it is. You don't need
blank.
Dude.
By giving him a name and a purpose that we don't know.
I disagree so vehemently with that, Jimmy. I cannot believe you're even saying it. It's below
don't,
you.
Don't. Here's what I wrote before Jamie cuts. Dude, don't make me fucking go to Google to figure out your movie. Like, if I have to leave and go to Google to figure out your movie.
But he made it up. You don't have to figure it out.
He didn't make it up. It's a real demon.
I know, but he made up the lore around it.
No, he didn't.
I know. He researched it, but he also fudged
stuff. Right, he used it. So fucking use it.
But it doesn't matter. That is just a demon.
Yeah, I actually Jamie tend to... Cole, yeah. Well, I tend to agree with Bob a little bit on this, that he's a MacGuffin. He's a goober.
It's a MacGuffin. Yes.
He's a MacGuffin.
The MacGuffin. Thank you. God, yes.
But
he's a MacGuffin.
The Holy Grail doesn't matter that it's actually the Cup of
MacGuffin.
Christ.
He's a MacGuffin. Okay, that's a good point.
But, fine.
I'm sorry.
But no,
don't be sorry.
But... My
what an episode.
My thing is, I love you.
I'm sorry.
I love you too, man.
I'm working out my feelings about the ending, like why I felt this way.
Because
here's what I realized I felt this way. I went in, somehow the movie tricked me into thinking it was arc plot. And these things were going to pay off in a very specific way. And I was going to go off.
First two thirds?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going off of the movie itself saying it's going to give
you these
answers.
After,
not my expectations.
A week after.
But an arc plot movie would have King Payman just show up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a different movie. That's like Dogma or something.
Well,
End of Days.
Yeah, that's like End of Days. Yeah, no, right.
A bad example is she wakes up and she's Charlie and it's a dream or something like that.
It's in a snow globe.
Yeah, it's in a snow globe.
Right, yeah.
So I was expecting this kind of tie it up in a bow thing. And instead, I got this other thing. And now I had to go back and try to piece it back together, which was sort of obvious because it was kind of the way I thought it was contextually setting it up, like a cult and creepy things and stuff like that. But then I was like, I got to go back and figure it. And when I went back to check all the boxes, they didn't check.
They don't add up.
I was like, it's a mini plot.
Right. I get what you're saying.
That's kind of what happened with me. That's kind of what happened with Lost with me, too.
Same.
Even though Lost. I think was an arc plot, but they just couldn't figure it all out. So they kind of did their own.
They never had the answers. That's the problem.
So that's where I was.
You were saying that this did the thing that you got disappointed by is that this did have the answer.
It did have the answer.
It was lazy in the answer.
Was it though? Why? Yes. I still don't agree.
I don't know if it was lazy or not. It was just a different type of thing.
Okay.
I was playing game with it than it ended up
since
being.
Tell me that if it didn't do the Pokemon card thing, you guys wouldn't be sitting here saying, I hate this even more. Tell me that. Because this feels like the movie feels like it still is cohesive to me.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't say it's not cohesive.
But what I'm saying is that if it was even more so, like, what is happening? What's happening? What's happening? And then the ending was like, what just happened?
I'm saying don't.
You know, Jack Black comes out and does a dance, and then, like, the whole world explodes.
I'm saying, how are we waiting 100 pages to hear the word Payman the first time? When Payman is
well, it's just a demon.
And
it doesn't matter. I don't think we need to hear Payman. I agree with the MacGuffin thing. He is just a demon. Yeah. The fact that they say the name, that doesn't matter.
I'm sort of wrestling through it because it's like at the end of Sixth Sense. Imagine that they wheeled back the curtain and they said, "And Bruce Willis is Payman," and it would be like, "What? Huh?" That's not what this is doing.
That's a weird example, man. But yeah.
But no, I'm trying to think of something where you're expecting one thing and then you get introduced to something in the end that's not. The reason Ghost works is because we have this kind of knowledge of ghosts. I would argue on your side, we have a knowledge of demons and Satanism and cults
I'd say the movie is definitely everything in it up until the shit hits the fan is pushing towards some type of cult thing. And cults are generally associated with demon worship.
I agree. I agree.
You know, that's it. I mean, I don't think it's that Pokemon card left field of it.
No.
I mean, in some ways, it's the straight-up answer. What I'm getting confused at is if I'm saying if it was a Pokemon card, which I don't think it is.
It's not.
If it was like, you know, like I said, it's something that is so out there, like, you know, this, you know, just like, oh, it's crab people.
I wish he had seen Lost Seasons. I wish he could, because just saying that is the way it made me feel.
I'm never watching Lost, ever.
The way it made me feel is exactly how
it's not a movie like
and
The
that
Lobster
is, the promises
or
were made.
You know,
it promised. Yeah, right. I thought the obvious answer was it's a cult and demon. And then the promises made by the ambiguity suggested that it's something way more interesting and different.
I think Jimmy's explaining it better than
It's my experience asking the questions that it posed based on scene by scene were Well, I mean, the obvious thing would be that this is a cult and there's a demon possessing these people. And if and but it's got to be something more than that because of these great questions it's making me ask.
The mentalness, the sleepwalking.
And then like, when I get
I guess I feel like the hack answer would be it's the M. Night Shyamalan ending where it's not all that. To me, the inevitability and then being pushed and pushed and pushed, it goes with what happened is that it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that kind of goes
I'm
with the theme of it.
I'm trying to tell you about my emotional reaction to it.
I get it.
And I don't and I don't believe there is any possible way to figure out it's King Payman until page 100,
which
when
I'm
it tells
fine
you
with.
King Payman. Yeah, but it acts
How
like
about this?
It acts like you could figure that out.
If
but
we
you
had
can't.
To disagree on something, it's that I don't think it's lazy. I think that this is intentional and it's exactly what he wanted to do. That's what I guess that's what I'm arguing.
Let
do you know
me,
what I'm saying?
Me,
he didn't do
I'm
it like, well,
it
I guess it's, it is just a cop.
I'm saying that wrong. Laziness is not the right word. It's
ineptitude is what you're saying?
No, not,
I don't,
no,
I don't
not
agree
at
there
all.
Either.
I'm trying to put my finger on the words. It's just it didn't do the work to earn the moments that in the end. That,
man, I wish
that,
I just can't see what you're saying.
Yeah, it's
so
it,
I don't
it
agree.
It didn't connect with me at all.
Yeah, I don't agree.
I saw the strings from fade in to fade out. I saw the strings at every scene,
which I think we've talked about,
and that
I think
not,
seeing the strings is part of it.
And I never felt disconnected from the filmmaker and their efforts.
I came out of that,
but I think the strings are definitely part of it. This
I never lost
strings.
Myself in it for a single moment.
The reason I like the movie is because, like I say, I don't think
I'm actually surprised that you're not him and he's not you. Yeah. But I know it's weird to say, but
I don't think hate for a movie can be retroactive. Like, I think your experience in the movie is the experience. And I mean,
like the first time you see it.
Yeah, when I walked out of it, I was like, wow, I must have missed something or something.
I'm
not sure. I've got to go back and rewatch that.
Yeah.
So when I rewatched it, I kind of have my doubts. And I think, again, laziness isn't the thing, but maybe.
It's the wrong word for it.
Maybe
I'm sorry.
It needed.
Well, yeah,
needed
I mean, I think that is the wrong word. I don't think this guy's lazy.
That's not what I. No.
Right. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So if
well, you said lazy.
I said it. Well, because I'm mad.
Why, though?
Movie makes me mad.
When I walked out of it, I probably would have given it a B+ cinema score. I wouldn't have given it an A+, but I probably would have given it a B+. I would have said,
B+ is pretty good.
I was entertained and stressed out and tension, and it worked well and all for all the good reasons. But as I kind of reflected on it and started to do the math and figure out how the screenplay worked, that's when I kind of drifted back away from it.
Yeah.
However, I'd give it a B+ cinema score.
Right.
That would have been my lock.
I mean, I feel like as being the defender of it, I think I've said like it's not the movie to putting the script under scrutiny is not even something I wanted to do.
So,
because I don't think it's that type of movie where
I agree.
You know what I'm saying? Like I didn't. This is cool. This is a great episode, but I don't.
Surprisingly,
it's a weird one to talk about.
Surprisingly, I'm more the type that goes with the critics, where I'm sitting in a movie theater saying, "Show me something different. Show me something different.
Yeah.
Don't give me the cheeseburger." And while
that's a really weird thing for Jamie Nash.
Yeah.
To say.
No. While I appreciate the mechanics of the cheeseburger and the craft of the cheeseburger, I'm always interested in something new and different. And so when they break that, I'm cool with it.
This right off the bat, I am 100% with you, Jimmy. I do not look forward to the 900 Hereditary
ripoffs. That's my main concern.
But that is not
by heralding this work,
this movie's responsibility.
You're right. I'm placing something on it that I don't deserve to place on
this movie's allowed to exist and allowed to, that is a filmmaker's voice is allowed to
absolutely.
Be said, and everyone who copies off of him ain't his fault.
Absolutely.
And there is
going
to be a lot of hacks that copy this.
That I'm going to be reading those scripts.
No,
Jimmy, fucking tomorrow.
Jimmy, you should hate this movie because it's going to ruin your life for a little while.
but let's
seriously.
There are no. I'll get the script and I'll send it back for those. Well, there are no rules.
Yeah.
I mean, who cares?
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
do. Hereditary taught me that I could do whatever, and people will love it.
I want you guys to know when I say that, and I feel like you guys know this about me already. When I say that, you guys know I love the cheeseburger.
Yeah,
you
love the cheeseburger.
You know, I love the cheeseburger, but I say that in like there's gems that don't follow the rules.
I agree. I'm dude. Tools,
right.
Not rules.
I'm not saying you don't throw everything out and nothing matters. But, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that this to me doesn't and it works.
That's
what I'm saying. I want to make that clear to anyone listening. I don't want them to think, well, Bob's just doesn't care about anything.
I think one thing I do have to say before we finish up is that this movie totally ripped off Paranormal Activity 3.
I mean, Well, it's good. You know, we got to talk about this type of movie. I think Jamie made the right choice.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up.
No, it's a movie I wrestle with as far as why it works, because I liked it.
And I watched it 3 times, and I read the screenplay. Right. I tried to find the answers to why you don't like it.
Right.
And every time I watched it and every time I read it, I liked it less to where I've gotten to this point.
And I watched it last night by myself, which is the first time I watched it by myself. I actually liked it more.
Oh my God.
Which is odd. I didn't even think I'd like it more. So,
there's just so many choices made by the people. Like the attic, if there's a body in your attic, you would choose to investigate it and not let it sit there for days until somebody says, "Have you checked out?" They literally say, "Have you checked out what's making that smell in the attic?" It's the choices. I don't believe
the choices, right? And I
don't believe. And
we don't need to get back into it. But once again, I do feel like the movie's about forces guiding everything.
Yeah,
which he doesn't explain, and that is something that half the people in CinemaScore are gonna fucking hate, and half are gonna love. Because people, you know what I mean? Like, you see a lot of reviews like, "Well, what does that mean? What is that? We don't understand. How does the Infinity Stone work? Fuck this movie." You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's
some
true.
People want literally want I a hope science
I don't,
book.
I hope I don't come off like that.
You
guy.
Don't come off like that, but I'm saying some people do. They want an explanation of everything.
The problem with horror movies, sometimes when you start to explain it, it feels more artificial and less scary.
Yeah, that's true.
That definitely happens.
That's true.
There's a balance, and some people argue this hit it, and some people definitely argue it didn't.
Dude, most of the horror community adores this movie. Like, one of their top 10 horror
movies. But see, then I see a lot of people hate it
so
vehemently.
Now, the people that I'm connected with in the horror community, this is on their top 10 list, top 10 horror movies of all time.
It's the type...
They're going to send me messages.
It's the type of movie that is people's favorite movie.
Jimmy should hate this movie because you're going to get so many scripts. I do agree that you are going to get so many scripts that
are like... I have seen my future.
Yeah.
Well, sadly is... This is the reason I think Jimmy's uptight about this particular movie. Sadly is he's already gotten scripts like this, and now they're just going to
pull
this.
Yeah, no, I have.
No, before Hereditary came out, he got the lazy version of this.
Yep.
That wasn't intentional, and things didn't
add
up. Oh,
man, now you're going to get the argument.
Now they're going to argue, "Well, you don't know what you're talking
about."
That's
my
And then they're
going to
go to
worry.
This podcast.
They'll be like, "Hereditary made $48 million domestic." So. No.
I think that's where he's coming.
You have hit it on the nail. Yeah, the nail on the head. They're going to say it doesn't matter. None
Jimmy
of it matters.
Jimmy saw the script before Hereditary, which I don't agree. Like, and he'll keep seeing it.
Which you would, if I was you, and I am not, what I would say to that person is, are you as skilled a filmmaker as Ari Aster? No.
That's why it's so good.
Yeah, and the answer is, you're probably not.
Probably not.
And he's a writer-director. This is his vision.
That's why it works so well.
From moment one, it's his vision, and that's why it works. And that person is just going to be like, "Whoa."
He had the skill to take what was on the page and expand it aesthetically. Yeah.
And it is a movie about aesthetics and feel.
Absolutely.
And sound. And that's why it works, and that's the stuff we're not supposed to talk about.
I can't wait to see his next movie, and I'd hire him in a heartbeat for my pilot. So call me.
Yeah, let us know.
All right. What have we learned?
Oh, yeah. What have we learned, Jamie? What have you learned? You're the important. I think me and Jimmy learned our stuff.
Yeah. Jamie, what have you learned as the man in the middle?
Well, I honestly do think there's value. You know, mini plot movies are in no way bad. Some of them are my favorite movies. Some of them are people's favorite movies. Don't necessarily fear them. My only advice is, if you're new to screenwriting, try to stick with the arc plot just so you learn the rules, just so you can make these arguments in a meeting. Learn that, because you can learn that. Harder to learn mini plot. It's more a feel thing. So that's what I would say about this movie.
I'll say what I think is good information about this movie is, you shouldn't make this movie, and I don't know his background that much except for the short film thing, which makes sense to what you're saying, but if you're going to make a movie like Hereditary and bother Jimmy with it first, you better know how to make an arc plot movie first.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have to know that, and then you get to make this.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
No, like, I'm just saying that as advice.
Yeah.
Like, if I was going to make my Bob's Hereditary, I would make Bob's Galaxy Quest first, or write Bob, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Know that first.
Okay.
Until you do that. You know what I mean? Because if you're fucking it up.
No, I agree.
If you're breaking rules that you never followed.
Yeah, that you didn't know how to follow.
Yeah, if you didn't know how to follow, it's weird. That's weird. You have anything? Mm. You're done?
I've said my piece.
You're done? Okay.
I don't want to start talking about it again because I'll talk about other stuff.
Are you sure?
Okay. I just just beware. I mean, choices are the thing that I come back to. I just, if you're writing a story, it's very important that you make the characters consistent with the behavior you have shown them to display from page one. Obviously, things can happen that force them to make choices that they never would have made before. But I so often read scripts where things are happening because the storyteller needs them to happen, not because mm-hmm. they would have happened. And why I'm saying that is based on what the writer has shown us from page 1 to 30 about Joe. On page 31, the story needs Joe to do something, and the writer says, well, Joe will choose to do that. But the Joe that we knew from page 1 to 30 would never do that. And this movie, in my opinion, does that thing like 20 times. And so just be careful. If you have a story and you need a character to make a choice to move that story forward, make sure that that character has been shown that they would make that choice, that it's a plausible decision made by your character. There's my piece.
Yeah, don't be elevated. Don't elevate anything.
De-elevate.
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 Okay. I'm not even going to respond. We're good. We're good. Everybody good?
Sounds good.
Hereditary over. All right. Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Follow us.
Hail Payman.
Come attack me.
You know what? If people listen to this, I bet they'll attack me more.
Hashtag Hail Payman.
Hail Payman.
Hail Payman. Watch. Oh, you know he's real. I don't know if I'm going to go actually saying it all the time.
Jesus.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
You've just listened to Writer's Blockbusters, a screenwriting podcast featuring two professionals and another guy. Available only on Thundergrunt.